in our present, it is Friday, May 28th.
And that means this week's past.
This is amazing. Hello, everyone. You will never know what happened. And this is because it's something that happened in the past.
In the past, exactly.
This is this week's past. It's a podcast coming live at you from Twitch.
Even when we're not on Twitch, we're still coming live at you from Twitch. But also, we are coming later to you via YouTube, maybe. Hello, future people. And we may also be coming live to you straight through some headphones without any vision as a podcast. Could also happen. Main important thing is that you're there. Wonderful. Thanks.
All right. So whenever you are, wherever you are, let's get ready to talk about some pasts.
Absolutely. And to do that, we have a very special guest with us who's not only our collaborator at the past at PlayLab that we'll talk about in a little bit, but also many other things. So who are you?
Hi, I'm Sibyl Lammers. Nice to meet you all. We know each other quite well.
Yeah.
I'm very thrilled by being here. I am, you know, then I start to struggle, like, who am I,
what am I doing,
oh my God, am I anything, but I am something, I suppose, in this role. I work at Leiden University, like we all do, and I'm a professor. I'm a professor officially. New media and digital culture, but as my friends here always call me, I'm actually the professor at Play because I do a lot of research about play. And that's also what brings us together, not only in this project, but also in our lab, the Past at Play Lab, of which we will talk more later, but in which we do also play games with you to find out about how you experience the past.
Absolutely. More of that lab talk is coming up. By the way, we're live on Twitch, so if you're there, you can talk to us and you can ask questions. That's absolutely the case. If you're on YouTube, you can leave things in the comments. We'll read them.
You can still ask questions.
If your podcast, leave us a review. Leave us a review of your podcast listening to this.
Exactly.
Yeah. But maybe first thing up, news of this week.
So, then. Bam, very nice. This will be the news segment of this week's past, where we will be talking about various news items regarding the past. And, of course, the biggest news that could be about the past.
The biggest news of the past this week.
At least when it comes to our news, it's that we introduced this podcast, this week's past, and the Streaming the Past project at large.
Yes, absolutely. The Streaming the Past project has launched officially last week with a very nice inaugural lecture that you can go catch on Twitch still, but also on YouTube later. It was really a nice where we just got to chat about why we're doing this. So we're not going to talk too much about that right now. You can just watch that. And we also got to backstab each other last week.
Oh, yeah, very much so. We played some Among Us. We did some talking. We did some stabbing. Sibyl, you were there as well. You're also part of the Streaming the Past project, of course.
I am. Yeah.
So you will be seeing more of us, you will be seeing more of this, you will be seeing more of what you saw before, if you caught that, the stream with pirates.
With pirates. What did we have this week? We had pirates just now.
We had Assassin's Creed Odyssey, we had some Peloponnesian War, and we also had some trials with some animals. We had Aviary Attorney.
Yeah. All live streamed by our wonderful past pros, Sophie, Nina, and Eva, with the support of Omer, the support pirate, right? So that was also very, very nice and neat. Really enjoyed that, and hopefully people will turn in next week again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the week after, and the week after, all the way until, well, infinity and beyond.
Exactly.
All right.
So, coming up next, I'll be grooving after every news item.
That's
I
just
think.
Groove. Just a groove after every news item. We had a great time picking this groove, right? Just an evening of on Audio Jungle. Audio Jungle.
Audio Jungle, exactly. We had an evening where we were trying to find all the jingles, and we ended up with this with some groove right there.
You know, we also got a groove. This is a horrible transition because it's not actually a groove. But it's something grooved into a groove in a hillside. It's not actually that at all. The CERN giant. So if you have not got a clue what the CERN giant is, it is in fact this giant on a hillside, but then a depiction of it. And for the longest time, this particular CERN giant wasn't dated. And that, in the past, is a horrible thing. If you don't know your place in the past, then, you know, you're lost, basically.
Yeah.
People were saying, this CERN giant, probably the Victorians have done it. And other people said, no, this must be Bronze Age people. Turns out, here I'm going to go, OSL, so optically stimulated luminescence, which basically means firing light at particles, in this case, sand particles.
Sand particles. In this case.
You get to see. There's a very long. I had this like literally 15 years ago. I heard about this, and basically it means that there's little bits flying off. Let's keep this very, very poppy. Bits flying off from it, and you get to measure those little bits that are flying off from it. And the more bits are flying off from it, or the less bits are flying off from it, the older it is, basically. So they found out, not Victorians or nothing at all. In fact, Anglo-Saxons. Would you believe it?
Wow.
It's those
Anglo-Saxons.
Or I think, as we should say now, maybe not Anglo-Saxons, but the early medieval period. It depends on where you are on this debate, if you can still say the Anglo-Saxon era.
And so would you say this is a playful depiction?
Maybe not necessarily playful, but otherwise maybe lustful. The CERN giant is giant in many regards. Let's keep it PG rated. And one of the things that the CERN giant helps with, according to folklore, is by getting pregnant. So I guess that maybe these early medieval folks were able to look into the future, saw that we needed some help getting pregnant maybe in the present, and made this giant for us. Who knows? But we now know from when this giant hails.
When the play started on that hillside, basically.
That is definitely when the play started.
Yeah.
It was actually quite a long project that went into there to actually figure out, collect all the correct samples and perform the OSL, very small scale excavations, a lot of mini trenches in a way.
Because the thing is, you need old sand. You need sand that is not, illuminated.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if the sun shines, it loses that particular property. So it was a very detailed thing. And, of course, one of the hard things is you need to make sure that sand is cultural, right? So, you know, sand can be is everywhere, right? Yeah. But you need to make sure that sand was put there by people at a certain point in time. Ah. So this was actually a major, major technological achievement, aside from being a very fun thing to know about this particular giant.
I'm very curious because there are many of those kind of depictions all over that part of the UK, especially.
Yeah, you wonder if they're all now from that particular period or not. And that's, I think, I'm gonna guess that has to be the follow up project for this. I haven't read anything about that, but would be a logical choice, right?
Absolutely,
for this advanced grunt that you get to put in now.
Yeah, for sure. So if you have any comments or questions about what the CERN giant is, or if you want to know more about it, or if you know more about it and you want to share it with us, please put it down in the chat.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Or in the
comments. If you made the CERN giant.
If you made the CERN giant.
Need to know.
If you're back from 1000 AD, let us know. That would be quite the achievement to have survived up until now. A very impressive find, nonetheless, I think.
Absolutely.
So,
next up, are we grooving?
We're grooving. By the way, in case you haven't noticed, this is our pilot episode, and all of this is all happening live.
Absolutely. If you're like, why are these people doing such weird things? It's because we have to find the buttons now and again.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
And we try to make it playful at the same time.
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely
what we are about in the end.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're listening to this as a podcast, just dance along by yourself. That's absolutely fine. It doesn't matter if you're in some sort of subway, just in the middle of your house. You know, dance. Dance. Have
especially
fun.
At these times, you know, of confinement, we need to dance.
Yeah,
we need to dance, absolutely. We need to dance with somebody. You might as well dance with us.
Yeah.
So because we're doing pretty okay in terms of time, I will make the executive decision and go for the computer versus archaeologist item.
Go for it. Go
so
for it.
Recently, an article, and I hope I will not slay these names, by Leszek Pavlovich and Christian Donum. They did a study on deep learning and whether we can use deep learning for a ceramic typology classification. So if you know if you're familiar with anything archaeologists love to make typologies. They make typologies literally out of everything and most of all ceramics. Already from like the 19th century,
what we're about. As soon as we stopped putting stuff only in like nice cupboards, then the next step was what ceramic painting is this?
Yeah. Exactly. So the question then arose, I guess, in their minds, can we use this? Because there are some patterns, an internal algorithm, so to speak, in ourselves where we try to classify these things with. Can we use this by using AI and deep learning? And they used, for their case study, they were using the Tusayan whiteware from Northeast Arizona. Mm-hmm. And they argue in the paper, and I quote, when properly trained, a deep learning model can assign types to digital images of decorated serge with an accuracy comparable to and sometimes higher than for expert-level contemporary archaeologists.
Yeah.
So that's quite fast.
And that is exactly the thing, right? So it's, we like to do it. Maybe not people. Many people like to do it, but at least we like coming up with typologies, but we don't necessarily like identifying pottery. It's one of those busy things that you have to do at the end of a hard day in the field. You're like sitting there again and it's sort this pottery or in a museum depot. Not very. Some people find it fun. Flow is definitely an aspect of that for sure. Can be meditative. Can also be very time consuming anyway. So it's a pretty good idea to ask a computer to do this. I have to say, maybe we can should have put a picture of the Tusayan pottery, but you can use your Google Foo and just look it up yourself.
I can put up in the chat. I'll put up an image. But
it is very particular pottery though. It's very white with very black clear motifs.
So easy peasy in a way, you would say.
I'm gonna say it's not easy peasy to sort of because
no, the technology isn't of course.
These archaeologists in this part of the world really like their topology, so it's very hard to spit them all out. But for a computer vision point of view, there's a lot of contrast. It's not so the as we call it in Dutch sometimes hondenbrokken, like the dog biscuits that we used to work with in the Caribbean. I don't think a computer would do so well with that. That's just my absolutely uninformed computer vision.
It's the beginning.
It is definitely the beginning. Little fun story there with when it comes to the beginning. I was part of an archaeological project years ago now, the Nexus 1492. We were working together with a bunch of computer scientists who were supposed to be mainly doing network science, but they were computer scientists who were like, let's do new stuff. So one of the computer scientists actually we were asked to identify people we want to work with. And one of them said, you know what I can do? The ceramic people that he approached it like, what? I can build an AI that can do the stuff that you're doing much faster. And they got angry. They got angry a little bit. Like, what? No, it's like, you can just not do this. This is a very, very painstaking type of thing to do. And one of the things that I thought was neat about this article is that it sort of removes that. The archaeologists that were working with versus the computer were very happy to be working versus a computer. And
although there has been some criticism to it, and of course there are, I think this always happens when something sort of mechanical replaces.
Yeah.
And there have been some claims about the fact that there is also a certain skill that goes into that. It's not only about, you know, picking out similarities, but it's also about perception because culture is also about perception. Mm-hmm. Although I can imagine that somebody can come with the counter argument that the archaeological perception can also be biased, then a computer could remove this bias.
Yeah.
There's a very interesting discussion, I think, in there.
What part of your scholarship, the scholarship of play, could be mechanized, do you think? Nothing much, right?
Well, I mean, if you look at the first, the chess, computer chess, and how that was actually used as the first sort of experiment, play yeah. was used as the first experiment in the 70s, I believe,
yeah.
to test AI. What was it called again, the machine?
Deep Blue?
Maybe? I always say Ocean Blue, that's why I asked
Deep
you.
Deep Blue, yeah.
Yeah. Against Kasparov, right?
Yeah.
And that's a very interesting case, not only that they played against each other, but also that Kasparov at one point said that IBM was cheating.
Yes.
And they weren't.
Yeah. Exactly. So he got pretty upset as well. Yeah.
And this as well, it's the scientist against the machine in a way. It is in a way in itself a sort of gameful activity.
Yeah.
And yeah. This whole debate about authenticity and about that the human brain has more subtlety than the computer and the fear of computers taking over, that's, of course, already started then.
Yeah.
And arguably already in myths, right? Like
yeah, absolutely. The other than
Pygmalion,
human. Yeah.
Bringing life, etc. So that always has been a debate about
true.
What can machines do.
True.
And is that dangerous? And does that take the soul out of things even. So yeah.
Exactly, the soul of the pottery.
Yeah.
Well, we now know that the computer has as much soul as pottery has.
But maybe you need the play of the scientist to really make the right analysis, right?
Yeah, probably. All right, we're moving on? I think we're moving on.
I think we're still quite a long way from actually have a fully successful deep learning typology machine.
Cross globally, yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So moving on. Bam. All right. So the next item on the list is something less funky, unfortunately.
Yes, absolutely.
And
yes, we were grooving, but this is not grooving.
No, this is not grooving.
It's crying.
This is crying, absolutely. So Sheffield's archaeology department is, well, first of all, it's a world-renowned archaeology department. I think that's the very first thing that we should say. It's not the Oxbridge in that sense that everybody always wants to be mm-hmm. there, but it's one of those places that I have a lot of good contacts with in the past, especially when I was still working Caribbean archaeology. Absolutely brilliant. Jamaican archaeologist was also there. And very full-fledged, traditional in the sense of good traditional, like deep roots, but it's very much under threat right now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it is an unfortunate situation that's happening across the UK and generally in the humanities across the world, one could very very easily argue. As you said, the Sheffield department has been one of the most important departments out there. A lot of big names, but literally thousands and tens of thousands of students have been trained there. If you're following Twitter, you can follow the hashtag archaeologist made in Sheffield to see all these people who have been trained and had very positive experiences from studying or you working at Sheffield. So this is a very real issue there, but it's also a very real issue in archaeology at large, and what's happening in Sheffield can very easily be projected in archaeological departments around the world.
Yeah, exactly. This is not one of those one university has to make a cutback and this is, or a reorganization, this is the target. This is really part, of course, from way up high, right? This is where it comes from. Because there's this continuous threat to particularly any of the cultural sciences, the humanities, if you will, and the human and social sciences, that they're not functional enough, that they're not efficient enough, that they're not targeting the labor market enough, which is absolutely a crazy idea if you think about archaeology in the UK, because it's still a growing professional field. So, but that's the general situation. And I don't know if you have similar experiences with departments like that being shuttered in your field that you're part of. But I'm gonna, it's a dangerous time basically
we are living in dangerous times. But it's interesting that actually in dangerous times, students also are very much interested in the humanities, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there is also when times are difficult, that people are, like, I was struggling for the words to introduce myself, who am I? Those sort of questions become more pertinent in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you just answer, well, you know, I'm a sales manager or whatever, which is fine if you're a sales manager, by the way, we don't hate them. But it's an easy, not so complex answer, but there's also many not very complex answers out there. Yeah.
So we need to make sense of things. And in a way, this project shows that we do need the humanities to make sense of the past from more than one angle. But humanities will always change. And that will also be the case, I'm sure, for your field, archaeology. Yeah. It is not only a threat, right? And money is ruling academia more and more. Mm. On the other hand, that we are standing here from our backgrounds together talking about the past and about play and the relation between the two is also something new, which came out of new ways of working together in research, basically.
Yeah, it's true.
So there's always hope, but there's, I'm always an optimist, hope. As you know.
There's still a tiny bit of hope right now for Sheffield, right?
So the situation right now, there was a protest on the 25th with over 120 people present there, and many more joined the online protest. And of course, thousands of signatures have been collected around the world.
Ten thousands.
Yesterday, the review's decision recommended closure, which is terrible news. Of course, so the review of the department has recommended that it should close and that the richer parts of it should be incorporated with other departments, which is, of course, sort of sugarcoating the fact that it's just going to close.
Yeah.
Now, this is the recommendation of the review, so this still has to be signed off by the university. It's not looking great. Not all hope is lost, but... It's definitely not looking great.
No.
So I think it shows that there is a call for archaeologists around the world to unite a bit and fight off against this kind of.
And where is that petition still signable?
Yeah, this petition is still signable.
It's a change.org petition. Yes. If you go to change.org and you search for Sheffield Archaeology Department, you'll definitely find it.
Yeah. Good.
And if you want to follow more about this situation, and you should follow more, either check Twitter, the hashtag Save Sheffield Archaeology, and as I said, the hashtag Archaeologist Made in Sheffield. So we will be covering this in the future, hopefully with a
good result,
with brighter news.
Yeah. Sure.
But we'll be looking back at this again.
Yeah. All right, next up.
Yeah.
Next up.
Main segment.
Next up, new segment. Bam.
Okay, this does feel this week's past, huh? This grooving that we
this
get to do.
This feels like this week's past. I've just realized. I've been using the wrong jingle for the news transition.
Yeah, that's fine. We get to groove a little bit longer.
Next week, I'm gonna fix that.
Yeah.
So
some fine tuning.
Yeah.
Our main segment in every of this podcast will feature this week's guest and a bit of an interview discussion and.
Or some other deeper dive into the past at large, right? And this case, particularly in the past at play. So we already talked a little bit about the past we did a lot of past playing this week.
Yep.
But there's, aside from this thing that we're doing, we're also doing the Past at Play Lab, which is this project. I always like when you say it's about, you know, where playing is the main thing, right? It's really about getting access to the past through play. And that's really what it is at its core. Yeah. And it's where we found each other, right? In terms of our intersections of interests. And, you know, I injected a bit of that computer vision type of stuff that we'll actually have to do. And hopefully I will be faster than a computer, or the computer will be faster than me, sorting it out. But... you know, Aris did the archaeology part, or is doing the archaeology part, and you brought the play. So that is what it is, but as a concept. But what is it in practice?
Well, maybe let the concept work towards the practice, because we are all indebted here to someone in Leiden who died a long time ago, and that's Yeah, and when you're not Dutch, you don't know how to pronounce this word, I'm sure, because it always makes people nervous. Johan Huizinga.
There we go.
With the ga.
Huizinga. Yes. Exactly. And Johan Huizinga, as some of you may know, was a cultural historian, and he wrote a very important book about play, which we all love, and I have a sort of love-hate relationship with that book myself. But it's because he is very negative about technology, and look at us playing with and because and thanks to technology here. Sure. So I thought he was, I think he's a bit of a cultural pessimist in that way. But one thing we picked up on as the three of us when we started to work together is that he very famously said that culture, actually in his time, at his time and age, he said civilization, which is a bit of a iffy term maybe now. So let's say civilization, let's make that into culture. That culture, actually, play is sort of the fertilizer of culture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we took that and ran with it, because what we did, we said, okay, if play is constitutive of culture, it's also constitutive of how we think of our past and of history. So with that small but very important insight, we started to think, okay, how are we going to research that?
Yeah.
And we were successful in getting some grants, research grants.
The Snoek-Hornje-Luf grants, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, which is another Dutch person with a bit of a iffy past, I would say.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But anyway, we ran with that and we said, okay, let's see what we can do with it by actually, in a way, testing play by having people play. And that brings me to the experience you were hinting at.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we have Angus and Aris, who are far more technological savvy than I am, to be honest. And we set up a lab. And that lab has two sides to it, right? And one is playing very, very old games, right, Aris? Mm-hmm. Maybe you can talk a bit about that.
Of course. Yeah, very old games. That's part of the idea. So there the experience comes in again. So we want to because we suggest that we can study culture through play, then if we play these games, they offer sort of a little window in the experience of the past. So
like a time machine, a time capsule.
Yeah,
time machine,
yeah, exactly, a time machine.
Bring people back to...
Yeah.
So...
this magic circle into the past.
Yeah.
So we're playing these very old games. We're not going to say which games, because then it kind of beats the point for people who actually still want to visit the lab. And people can still visit the lab, by the way, in Leiden.
Yeah.
Depending on when you're watching this.
Depending on when you're watching this. If you're watching this 2 years down the line, not very likely, but hopefully, who knows?
Yeah.
Give us a call anyway. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So we have this data-driven study of the experience of play, basically. We ask people to play these games and tell us about their experience. And we think that this can offer a very solid approach to how we can study the past.
At play. In play, absolutely.
Yeah. And also play. How they experience and how they imagine how it would have been in the past.
Yeah.
And then there's the other side to the project.
Absolutely. And that is definitely the public, right? The fact that we're not playing for ourselves, with ourselves in our ivory towers, as we like to say. But we're really doing that with the larger playground that is out there, the playful citizens of the Netherlands or globally. I mean, everybody's welcome, right?
Absolutely.
You have to be able to read. So not the tiniest, and also people who unfortunately cannot read, they are not welcome for the simple fact that you need to read small letters and say, I agree to this. But for the rest, everybody is able to come there. So pastitplay.com, book a session, we always say, in our game bits. Another thing, a nice thing that you can watch on pastitplay.com or via YouTube. And it's the same type of idea that we have behind this streaming the past thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So we also play not that old games.
Absolutely. We also play, we're playing video games. Yeah. Oh, that's the second component to it. Yes, absolutely. Sorry.
So we you were setting me up for that. We are very interested not only in how you make sense of the past in the sense of playing an old game, but also that a lot of computer games which have the past in them in many different ways.
For sure.
And that is more about the side that how do we experience and think about the past in this sort of mediatized times, right?
Absolutely. And when you're talking mediatized, I think the simple idea that something is happening or has happened, and that's part of a video game.
Yeah.
That's also very much what drives other things that we do with video games, like the COVID-19 transmedia course, which was centered around games and how we play with this current crisis, which is a historic moment, right? So it extends beyond the past into the present as well through those sorts of things.
So we did a course on COVID-19 and play, which was more than only about how we play during COVID-19, but also a way for us to talk with students and reflect and have a little archive, really, about how people have played in these very strange, prolonged crisis times.
So
that's one thing we are very interested in, also relating it later in research to how people in other crises have played, right?
Absolutely, because, you know, this is for us a unique experience, but of course echoes back through time through other pandemics, but other crises as well.
And we also did a course with the three of us, right?
About the past at play.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful honors course, right, Aris? I mean, you raved about it the most. I think we all were very excited about it, but you maybe want to talk about that?
Yeah, very briefly, we did an honors course, which means that we had a very diverse set of students, not only from archaeology, not only from media studies, but actually from all over the university, which made it even more interesting. And it really was about this combination between the past and play. So it had a little bit about archaeology and the archaeology of play in there. It had a bit of philosophy and some philosophical takes on play. But it also tackled a lot of things that sort of intersect between past and play and something else. So play as, for example, that play is cross-sectional, for example, or play and colonialism, and these kind of topics, or
time traveling as well.
Time traveling, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the history of playgrounds we did as well, and that went from playgrounds within games, but also we linked that to the past. So it was a great way. We love to do interdisciplinary stuff, and that really allowed us to do that with very intelligent students, right?
And that was another important component that we, because it was teaching in COVID, so it was at a distance, but we really wanted to put the creative aspect of play in there. So we asked our students to be very reflective. We asked them to play a lot because it's a course about play. We asked them to write vignettes and keep sort of a vignette journal, so to speak, to where they reflect on their playful experiences. But we also asked them to make games themselves.
Yeah. And we did live streaming, like we do for this project as well.
As well.
Yeah.
So to recap, I think there's a couple of things that you can do if you want to play with us, right? With the past, in the past. Watch the game bits, which are made by our absolutely excellent student assistants, Lenneke and Lotte. Or go to the lab where you very likely either encounter Lenneke or Lotte.
Very welcome. Very,
so that would be great. Or in September, hopefully when things, you know, open up a little bit, we get to do pop-up labs around Leiden University. Maybe we'll even travel to, you know, a place near you, somewhere in Germany, somewhere else. And so that's another way. Pop-up labs, keep your eyes peeled for that. If you follow past at play on Twitter, you'll find all about that. And for the rest, I think it's just a keep playing yourselves, and of course also keep visiting these live streams because you get to play with us and the other student assistants as well.
Indeed.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm really hungry for some top of the pops.
All right, let's do this. Bam.
All right. We will, as always, but this is our very first one, so it's not as always just yet.
But it will be as always after
this
after
is setting
now.
The tradition.
This is setting a tradition, a long tradition of this week's past. But we will end these with Top of the Pops. We came up with many names, or I came up with many bad
past
names.
Of the pops.
Popping the past was also very bad.
The past is present. We had a lot of titles for this segment.
But now, what is it now? Popping the past?
No. Now it's past of the pops.
Top of the past.
We can do either.
Top of the past.
We're against method and naming.
It's a tongue twister anyway.
It has to do with past. It has to do with pop.
Exactly. Yeah. That's popular culture.
And we're popping the past in a way like we... making a hole in it, like in a balloon as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's the way that popular culture nowadays often gets to intersect itself into the past. And that's kind of the undertone of it, right?
Yeah, indeed.
So
what are we
You get to
doing?
Go first, because you want to share something about what is, in a way, already a historic or legendary series of poppy pasts.
So the idea of this segment is that we will be sharing these pop intersections with the past. This can be any kind of media, it can be news, it can be, but mostly media, hopefully. And I'm very excited. There is this sci-fi series that I really love, Dune, which is a historic series.
And book.
Yeah, it's been 6 books by Frank Herbert. Then his son continued the legacy with many, many, many more. Not that I would necessarily advise somebody to read this follow-up. Just read the 6 originals. The saga never actually concluded. But if you read Dune, I mean, you can also just read the first one. It's fundamental sci-fi reading, basically. But it has so many intersections with the past in it. From the name of a lot of the characters and the main family of protagonists, which is called Atreides, like the Mycenaean rulers. But also, it has a very vibrant and very interesting desert culture, which borrows a lot from desert cultures of today and of the East. And Frank Herbert had done such a beautiful job illustrating life in the desert and the importance of water and the importance of climate. And he was tackling a lot of topics that were relevant back then to him in a future based on a past, which I thought was... Yeah. Amazing and amazingly done. And the reason I'm bringing this up now is because hopefully 30th of September 2021, although you never know with these kind of things, we're getting the Dune movie directed by Denis Villeneuve. There has already been a Dune movie.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yes, there have been a couple of attempts as well.
Yeah. There has been a Dune movie by David Lynch. Yeah. Which you would expect it would be amazing because it's David Lynch. It was a flop. It was not great. There is a documentary about making Dune by Jodorowsky was planning to make Dune. It never finished. It was this ambitious project with Pink Floyd involved and also Geiger in the
talking
like
about
it was
pop,
crazy.
Yeah.
it was crazy. This super ambitious
that
project,
was top of the pops,
top of the pops. Yeah,
it was never realized. If you look up Jodorowsky's Dune, the documentary, but from there, a lot of music that Pink Floyd wrote for it went out in their albums. What Geiger made for it became the Alien. What Moebius did in his story panels became a lot of comics. Jodorowsky wrote a lot of comic books like the Metabarons from it. So it has... and there was also some video games that you played a lot.
It's transmedia storytelling.
It is absolutely
really.
Transmedia storytelling from the past to the present to the future.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I'm very excited about this because it has a great cast. It has all these... Yeah, the Dune, as I said, has all these layers of the past intersecting with the present, intersecting with politics. It's just such a timely
and rich
movie. It's such a rich, has such a rich past, and it's based on a lot of rich past.
And I gather that you're a fan.
I am
you're
a fan.
Pretty hyped.
I'm very hyped about this, as you can tell.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to put this out there.
Yeah.
And this was my
this
pass
was your
of the pops.
Pass of the pops pitch.
Pitch. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Great.
I hope it's not going to be disappointing.
Oh, I'm going to... I hope not. I really hope not, but I think it's going to be great.
Well, then you can report that as well. All the review.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
It was great,
when
whatever.
It's, exactly.
Yes.
We're going to make a main segment eventually for the Dune movie.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We'll tune.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get David Lynch in here.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows?
All right.
Angus, next up for me is something that I'm also pretty hyped about, and I've been, but I've already consumed all of it, so I'm less hyped about it than Aris is. That's Castlevania, the anime, the series. So Castlevania is one of these other... well, it's not so much transmedia, because I'm going to guess, aside from sort of action figures, Castlevania, the video game series, which is this classical Nintendo game series, which started in 1989, yeah, I wouldn't even know, like, really. Somewhere back. Basically, when I was starting playing with Nintendo, it was there. And that video game series has always been very epic. In the last couple of years, not so much has been done with the video game series. Mm-hmm. Its publisher, Konami, wasn't very much interested in it anymore. What they did do is they for the longest time had already been in the works, this particular this anime series based on the Castlevania universe. And Castlevania universe is basically not even a reimagining, but it's a playing around with classic, with a lot of classic media and also classic literature tropes. Whoops.
Oh, well.
About vampires, basically. Yeah. So, and that's really what I think. So this is a great anime. So super nice, even a nice storyline.
Yeah.
Interesting characters with, it's just not a long series, but actual character development. This is kind of rare that it's, for an anime like this. But also it really very, these people that made the series, they know their stuff when it comes to vampires. And I'm not saying like, oh, the garlic, oh, the, no, it's more the actual like Easter egg stuff. So, and also the histories of it. So everybody knows, of course, Vlad Dracula, and all that you sort of, he's over there somewhere in the east in Romania, Transylvania.
Transylvania, yeah.
Exactly. But here we actually are in this landscape. It's sort of not entirely clear what time it is, but it is very much historicized because there's all these struggles that this Romanian kingdom was also going through that are actually sort of played out, but then with the backdrop, so religious troubles, military invasions, etc. But at the backdrop of that, that's really sort of powered by all this vampiring going on, this clash between these vampire lords and these vampire lords and the humans that are mm-hmm. persecuting them and vice versa. It's this great thing. And one of the other things is that it also knows its vampire lore, because there's a couple of, and I won't give spoilers here, but there's characters that are in there that, so the Castlevania series itself is rich, so all sorts of characters from there, but also from, for example, Bram Stoker, you've got, and not like, oh, it's Dracula, of course, that's Bram Stoker, right? Yeah. We know that. But no, there's little reference, for example, to Whitby, this tiny, tiny North English
coastal
town, right? Yeah. Which was like at some point in the series, Dracula says, "I'm going to go there," and that's actually in the book. That's the landing spot of Dracula, of Bram Stoker's Dracula. So there's all these little references in there, and there's even a reference to a B movie star in the sense of B literature star of the vampire genre. So it's just great. Transmedia again.
And Trivial Pursuit in a way as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And that's so nice, because that's this other big part of pop culture, right? Yeah. That it's this Trivial Pursuit kind of thing. Yeah. And vampire Trivial
All
Pursuit.
All these references, and you can read it and enjoy it on so many levels time, right?
Yeah, and this is absolutely enjoyable on many levels. So, something else that's enjoyable on many levels, Sibyl?
Yeah, yeah. I would say, have been fascinated from the very beginning of the first lockdown here in the Netherlands with the whole way in which people kept playing and invented new kinds of play. So you may remember at the beginning all these little films you could watch of people building gyms in their home or making whole playgrounds
for squirrels.
Yeah. And all these sort of funny little things you could watch, that died a bit, right? That's not that much the case anymore, at least not here.
Well, we got serious, yeah.
But, there are all these things, also certain games which were played, like, which you have talked about in one of our courses as well, in which you find space within the play because you couldn't go that much outside. In certain countries, you couldn't go outside at all. So there's a whole fascination. I've been fascinated by this from the beginning of the COVID-19. And now there was a new twist to it. And that also relates to the past, I would say. Because yesterday I read in The Guardian, but I also found it back in the New York Times, that people are lured in the United States to get a vaccine by getting a lottery ticket.
Yes, they quite literally going, you know, the Corona lottery, they'll sort of like, I'm going to skip with that, and they're going to, an actual lottery, right, where you can win money.
Yeah, or also, I think, a scholarship for school. Scholarship, yeah, so it has this goodness to it.
Yeah.
And this, the New York Times heading says, who wants to be a millionaire, which is, of course, also, again, talking about references, it references the film, which is also very much a gamey film. So how play is used in power, for power and for persuasion, basically.
Yeah.
And although this sounds very weird, and it, you know, many newspapers were reporting on it, I think, and you as more historical people can probably tell me more about that, I don't think it's unique for these times at all, right?
No. It's just a very time-tested strategy to get people to play, and often for their gain, right? And actually, in that sense, get something that is for their gain as well. So, or for somebody else's gain, in the case of, for example, the Roman games, in which people would also get lottery tickets and would be able to win things, for example, food, right? Yeah. Something that right now you win a scholarship, that's very pricey. Food back then was also something you would want to win. So that would happen during the gladiatorial games while watching that. And of course, being sponsored by some sort of rich Roman aristocrat. So power is also very much part of it, and that's something you'll be looking at quite a bit as well, right?
Yeah, play about and the power. Relation between politics and play. Yeah. And of course also, like, our Greek friend here knows about, but also in Holland, right, the lotteries are also related to the state and, bringing money into the coffers, as they call them, I think.
There are state-sponsored lotteries, and very often, like, they play on that to make sure that they bring something on the in the coffers, and weird ways of making sure that
time-tested, whether it's crisis or pandemic here, Kansas.
So love playing, we love games, but we also know that it can have other functions, and that's very interesting when we talk about and chat about the whole relation between the play and the past, also in games, in our streaming with the students.
Absolutely.
So this is a very, very apt example of that, I think, which ties into that.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows that wherever you turn, you can find play, and wherever you turn, you'll find something that has passed, that has happened, that can be entangled and hooked with that. So and that's really what this vodcast series will be about, right? So more for the following episodes. We'll be kicked out by the powers that be very soon out of this building.
We have to wrap this up.
Yeah.
But so this was the very first edition of this week's past.
Absolutely, and to many more. And you will be able to find us every single time via going to streamingthepast.com.
Every 2 weeks, actually.
Every 2 weeks, that's the idea,
In the meantime, don't forget, and I will actually be queuing up our outro very slowly because we want to be grooving. There we go. In the meantime, don't forget to catch the awesome Let's Plays of our past pros on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays from 2 to 5. If you're with us on Twitch.
Absolutely. Thank you for being present.
Thank you.
And
happy me as well.
For all the future people who are watching us on YouTube or listening us on your favorite podcast platform, thank you so much for hanging out with us as well.
And a heartfelt thanks to all the past people who made this present possible as well.
Indeed, yeah.
Whenever you are, we hope you stay happy.
And stay healthy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.